Hey friends, let's go back to the 90s with our new book, Mixtape Theology, 90s Christian Edition. It's part devotional, part retrospective, and all awesome. Rediscover the wonder of songs like The Great Adventure and Jesus Freak as you uncover their spiritual significance. But you know, we couldn't just give you a book without some 90s Christian cheese. We've included some original comics and hilarious retrospectives. Michael Tate of Newsboys and DC Talk calls Mixtape Theology the ultimate nostalgic throwback, and Michael W. Smith calls it a great read. Mixtape Theology will have you falling in love with these songs and the gospel all over again. It's nostalgia served with a side of renewed faith, and it's available now at Amazon and Walmart.com. Now, back to the podcast. Like the freedom of the first day of summer, coming home when the school year's done, staying up, sleeping in when you wanna, feeling so carefree and young. About you, oh, soft and sincere, just like nostalgia.
Welcome to Mixtape Theology. This is Dr. Ashley, and I'm your host. It is good to be with you here at Mixtape Theology, where me and my partner, Rachel Cash, love 90s contemporary Christian music. And what we like to do is we like to dig into the lyrics of some of our favorite contemporary Christian music songs from back in the 90s, look at the theology and what we were thinking, where we were in our faith then, and how we have grown in our faith over the last 20 or 30 years, as well as get nostalgic, pick at ourselves, make fun of ourselves a little bit, and just have a good time doing it. Today is a special day at Mixtape Theology, as I have a guest that that I have recently come into contact with and grown in a relationship with him, and I'm so thankful that he is here to be with us at Mixtape Theology. I have American Idol runner-up, Mr. Clark Beckham. Clark, it's great to have you today.
Thanks. I'm excited about our conversation.
So I asked Clark to be a part of a Mixtape Theology podcast, and just to give you a little bit about Clark, if you're not as familiar, I'm sure some of you are, Clark was the runner-up, I believe it was the 14th season of American Idol in the year 2015, and so you almost won.
Almost. Almost. Got right at the end.
How does that? How did that feel to be there with all the confetti flying and to be the one that didn't get the votes? It was a close vote, right?
I don't know if it was close or not, but it's an interesting feeling, and it's you've got two competing emotions coming. One took me by surprise, and it was actually very strong, which was excitement for my best friend at the time, Nick Fratiani, who just won. Because you're with these people for almost a year, and you've in such a bubble away from like real world, and you're with each other. And you know, Nick and I went the whole way and experienced it all together, and so you get really close. And that was one thing that surprised me, was I was so excited for Nick and that he won. It's like your best friend just won American Idol. That's exciting. And then the other emotion was you lost, you know, and just the you lost. And so there was that too. And then seeing the confetti and his name in the back flashing, and all the like top 24 contestants rush on stage and hug them and are celebrating. And I'm celebrating too, but it's a little bit of an awkward moment. But yeah, that was an interesting it's an interesting moment that runner-ups go through right there.
Now, I know you and I have talked since then, and in some ways, you feel like maybe just in God's sovereignty that it maybe is not the worst thing in the world that you didn't win.
In all ways, it's the best thing in the world that I didn't win. I mean, I would have been honored to have the title and to work with everyone involved that you do work with when you win, but the path that I look back on that I took right after the show, being completely independent, I wouldn't trade that for anything. And I got to, I had a lot of freedom, and got to do whatever I wanted to do and didn't have to go through channels of getting permission to do certain things. I could just do it if it was an opportunity that I wanted. And so, I would, if I could go back and change anything, I wouldn't.
Now, that's interesting you mentioned about the people that you would have worked with. But even there, for those several months, if the audience recalls back when Clark was a contestant, the judges were Keith Urban, Harry Connick Jr., which is actually one of my favorite musicians ever, and Jennifer Lopez, J-Lo. Was that intimidating, putting yourself out there, singing in front of millions of people, watching it through TV, but then being critiqued by, I mean, if I just think the critique from Harry Connick Jr. alone would have had me shaking in my boots. Was that?
At first, it was extremely intimidating and made me very, very nervous in the audition process and in the very beginning of Hollywood Week. There's so many factors to it, not just, like you said, not just the people that are watching, you know, at home on their televisions, but freaking Harry Connick Jr. and Jennifer Lopez and Keith Urban, who's also a brilliant musician. But it got better as I went on, and I felt more comfortable, and they started to become comforting presences, actually. Just Jennifer Lopez especially took on a very motherly figure to all of us. And I was more comfortable when they were in the room than when they weren't in the room.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Now, so people may be listening to this Mixtape Theology podcast and are used to me interviewing someone like Wes King or Andy Crispin from For Him, or Michael Card, and you may be asking why Clark Beckham? You're not in the Christian music industry per se. So I do want to let the audience know why I have thought it'd be a good idea to bring you on. First of all, I've, you know, developed a friendship with you in the last few months, and I thought it'd be fun, and just to, people love to hear your story. But Clark is a great musician, and we're about music, but Clark is a Christian and grew up in church. Actually, I had him speak in our church, has an incredible testimony, and I think could give us a unique perspective and some things to chew on a little bit and think about being a Christian in the music industry, not necessarily contemporary Christian music industry. Clark helps out with worship in his church and when he's in town, and he's a worship leader. So I believe there's a lot of interesting things, Clark, that you bring to the discussion. So let's just start right there. How is it being a Christian, but not in the Christian music industry? Do you get challenged for that? Like, man, you should be doing Christian music. You're a Christian, or you should be a worship leader professionally at working at a church full time. But that's not necessarily what God has called you to do, but yet you still have to be salt and light where you are. So talk through that a little bit for us.
Yeah, I have gotten that before, not as much in the past 4 or 5 years, but in the beginning, I would get kind of the, well, you're running from your calling. You need to be, you're supposed to be a worship leader. If you love the Lord, you're supposed to lift him up with your voice. And what they meant was in a church setting as a worship leader exclusively. And what I would always say is I do lift God up with my voice and with my playing and with everything that I do, just because it's not in the genre that you would find on Spotify that's called Christian contemporary music doesn't mean that it's not of Christ, that it's not Christian. And honestly, I've been a worship leader, and I still am. I lead worship at my church from time to time. And there's a lot of people you can connect with and you can minister to on a church platform. But man, the harvest is ripe outside of the church building. And especially in an industry where you're the minority, people want the love of God. People want what the Holy Spirit has to offer. All of us do. We're designed for it, whether we know it or not. So when you step in a room and you have what everyone has been wanting and desiring since they were cognizant of life, it's you gain favor with man, just like Jesus did, you know, when he was growing in stature and in favor with man. Why? Because he was the love of God incarnate, and we have that ability too to be the love of God incarnate. And so usually the narrative is, or the question I get is, how do you keep your faith? It must be so tough, so hard.
Right. That's a question that I definitely wanted to ask you. So you are on the road in those environments, and even, you know, during idle for a year, and then since then, is that a challenge to just to continue to live out your faith in what maybe some people would consider not a Christian environment?
Right. And the answer is not at all. It actually is the most enlivening thing for my faith, if that's even a word, enlivening. It brings life and excitement and juice to my faith more than anything else, is being in a room with these brilliant people, brilliant creatives, songwriters, producers with great personalities and hearts of gold that have a negative connotation when it comes to Christianity and don't like Christians in general. I love that atmosphere. And to be somebody who can show them, hopefully, the love of God rather than the love of religion, which is typically what people are unattracted to, what seems to repulse people, is the man-made religion that we're all guilty of participating in. And I can show them, like, well, here's just in practical social situations what the love of God looks like. And it's my calling, and there's nothing else that I do that feels better.
So, yeah, that's fantastic. Here's something that comes to my mind as you say that, for those out there listening. This message of being light in the world, wanting to, hungry, if they don't even realize it, for love, and, you know, light shines in the darkness. This isn't just about a music artist who sings R&B in that environment who happens to be Christian. This is for the factory worker, for the school teacher, for the nurse. Like, this, that's kind of why I brought you in, because what I see you doing as a Christian in where God has called you, well, that should apply to all of us. I mean, I'm a pastor and do a mixtape theology. I've got to really push myself to get in those environments. But for the majority of the people listening to this podcast, they're already there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so this is a message not just about an American Idol runner-up that's trying to live out his faith. This is a message for the soccer mom listening to this Mixtape Theology podcast that's in a group of ladies at soccer practice that, man, this message applies to you every bit as much.
Absolutely. And it's not just for people that are in environments where they're the only Christian, like I am often. We have environments right here in the Bible Belt where people are born and raised in church, and they've gotten, without even realizing it, married not to Christ but to religion. And there are it's so easy to slide into that. And so it doesn't have to be a scenario where, like me, I'm in a room full of people who, if you ask them straight up, they would say they hate Christianity and hate the way that Christians act and what they believe. But in people who, and this, it's hard to not sound hypercritical or judgmental, but even people who profess the Christian faith, sometimes they're not really following what I see as the steps of Christ and the way of Christ. When you see how they live and their need in need of the love of God, and they might not even realize it in that way. And man, I'm guilty of that myself all the time.
Well, I know you told me, like, even when you were in high school, you were leading worship and wouldn't have even considered yourself a Christian at that point. Maybe everybody thought you were.
Yeah.
But you were kind of you know, had the Christian face on and were saying the Christian or, you know, I like how you're using religious things. And so you were there doing that and would have been perceived as probably a leader in your church and someone on stage. So what happened in your life for the light to go off for you to really come to Christ and in full realization that he died for your sins and it's a relationship with him and it's not a religion? So because obviously you had a change, because that's not your story now. Yeah. You're up on stage knowing full aware of who you're singing to and who you believe in.
Yeah. So as a kid growing up, I would go to the front to get saved every week because the pastor would explain what being a Christian was. And he said, if you don't have that, if you don't have God as a friend and Jesus in your heart and he's speaking to you and an ever-present help in time of need and all these things and these worship songs that would describe Christianity and what having Jesus in your heart is like, if you don't have that, come forward. So I'd come forward every week and then I'd repeat words and then still not feel any different. And the next week I'd come back again and again and again. And finally they said, hey, you don't have to do this. You're set. And they told me, basically, you're saved. And I realized, oh, this is saved? Okay. I guess that's all hyperbole, like all the he's closer than a brother. Like, I guess that's just, no one actually means that. And so I became, I was married to religion and not Jesus. And so I started, but you can do that. I mean, you can adapt to cultural norms that are Christian and Western church inspired and have a pattern that you go through and, you know, actually staying out of those, what I call loud sins, like partying, drinking, sleeping around, like the big obvious sins, will help your life. And you can enjoy that. And you can feel an entitlement of, look, I'm righteous and pious.
Yeah, you know, growing up, I heard you don't smoke, cuss, or chew, and you don't date girls who do.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
You can do that and think, I'm good.
So that's what that was my relationship with God, was not with God. It was with religion and those rules, which are good rules and patterns to live by, but it wasn't based on an actual relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
I had a crisis, a mental theology crisis where I was like, wait a minute, I think we made all of this up. And what if God's not real? And I don't think he is. And when that belief stopped, I didn't even know someone who wasn't a Christian. So I couldn't imagine actually coming out as someone who didn't believe in God. So I just kept going to church and kept leading worship. And I realized I can take my faith away. I can take my faith in God completely away. And I'm still doing everything exactly the same. So that really showed me that I didn't have a relationship with God. I had a relationship with man-made religion. And when I found God myself, the way I did it is when the Bible says we're set free by the word of by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony, our testimony. So my testimony wasn't something that was saving me, but my friends was, and this guy that I know that was involved in this, and now he's different. I watched other people's testimony, other people's story. That started to change me as I observed those testimonies. And then I started to come to a rational, it wasn't an emotional decision, it was a rational realization that, oh my goodness, I think this is all real. I think logically, I'm coming to the conclusion that this is all for real. And then I found God on my own, and I found for the first time when I was 18 years old, a relationship with the Creator, a friendship with Him. That became the new foundation and the first time that I had that I would call myself a Christ-following Christian lover of God and the Holy Spirit and everything He had to offer. You couldn't get a Bible out of my hands for the first week. I was constantly reading because now I was reading it as truth instead of a checklist item.
Right, right.
And that's what changed everything, everything for me.
That's fantastic. So that's the journey that's where you are now. And of course, that's when you were 18. So what are you, 30? Are you 30 mm-hmm. years old?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So goodness, when you were an idol, you were 24, 25?
22.
22.
22.
Man, that's young to even be in that place. So, you know, I've said that Clark's not in the Christian music industry, but when you are on the road, what's the stuff that you're jamming to? Like, what is the music that you're playing? And I want people to know that because he's not doing Christian music, he's not doing trashy music. I mean, there's still something about a Christian. So I don't want anyone to misunderstand this podcast. I'm not saying that, all right, anything's fair game, just be a Christian, but do the...
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know that you still probably have to be prayerful.
Absolutely.
And watch your own testimony and witness, but...
Yes.
But I know you do R&B kind of stuff, which I'm a fan of. Tell me about what you enjoy doing.
Yeah, I would describe the music that I write in a musical genre form of R&B and soul, pop, singer-songwriter, however you want to take that. On a philosophical level, as far as content, kind of what you just touched on, it's like, okay, anything's game, right? No, not at all. I write songs and I sing songs about the world that I observe through redeemed eyes.
Mm.
Because right now, if you don't have God as a cornerstone of your morality and your ethics and your philosophy of life, of course you're going to see the opposite sex in the way that we see it portrayed, that sexual relationship, that intimacy that we see in pop music that is so far from a biblical marriage. Of course you're going to see it that way. If you don't have any example or any teaching that you're holding on to, any self-constituting source that the Bible is, and that good Christian couples that I have the joy of watching and learning from. If you don't have that, of course that you're gonna think the way that they do. So, pop music, so much of it is just informed by how people are looking around and observing and walking their way through life without God. Okay, well, I want to write songs about how great marriage is. I want to write songs about how sad heartbreak can be.
Right,
and I want to do all of that. But my big rule is I will never, ever, under any circumstance, write or sing a song that is a stumbling block in any or promoting by promoting a destructive lifestyle. Ever won't do it, because what's the cost? You know, if someone told me, hey, you can sing this song and you will become the biggest artist on the planet and you're gonna be a billionaire, but it kind of makes sleeping around before you're married sound cool. If I did that, say I made $10 billion and gave it all to charity, you know, and gave it all to missions and stuff. But if I led one soul away and they started to adhere to what that song was encouraging, and I led one soul into a destructive lifestyle, that's not worth it. I don't want that. And that's not God's path.
Yeah.
One thing I hear sometimes from Christians, people who want to serve God and they're in secular industries like acting or entertainment industry at all, They said, yeah, I'm compromising my beliefs for this because once I get big, then I can use my resources there to help and to do these things. God doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
God doesn't say, hey, I want you to get here so you can be of influence. And the way that you're going to get there is sinning. God doesn't do that.
Yeah.
So that's my big thing is I will sing about the world that I see through redeemed eyes, and I will never promote a destructive lifestyle in any of the art that I do.
I love that thought, sing about the world that you see through redeemed eyes, and then not wanting to sing about anything that would encourage people to venture off what God has, what God's best is for their lives. So, man, fantastic. That is good. That's just good advice, and it's good for the audience to hear that. So, all right, so it's been a while since Idle. What are you doing now? Tell the audience about what your latest ventures and, you know, what's going on in the life of Clark Beckham.
Yeah, so what I'm really focused on right now is actually teaching. So after Idle, all the way up to 2020, all I did was live events. That was how I paid the bills. And I wrote songs and recorded them and released them, but that doesn't pay very much with streaming. When COVID happened, obviously all live events stopped. So I started thinking, I'm going to have to figure out how to make money virtually, you know, online. So I made a little commercial for myself as a music teacher, and I started taking on students, one-on-one Zoom lessons. And for 2 years, I taught probably 200 or 300 different students, from an 8-year-old how to play piano for the first, you never touched piano before, how to play, to a man in his 70s that's a pastor in Ontario, how to sing runs, and everything in between, all style levels. And after 2 years of teaching that, I realized that I think I can actually make a really strong curriculum that people can get everything that I know and have taught for much cheaper than a one-on-one lesson with me. It'll save me time, but also save them money. And so I've been working on a comprehensive music education program that is everything that I know and have learned that's not taught in class. You're not going to learn these things in voice lessons. You're not going to learn these things in music theory class. And I've learned it from, you know, people that I knew on American Idol, that band, which is the greatest band I think ever assembled.
Who's that guy, the guitar player that leads the...
Paul Jackson Jr.
Is that the... Okay, I was trying to... Maybe that's not the one I was thinking of, the house band there at American Idol.
He's the most recorded guitar player of all time.
Okay.
And wow. Yeah. He's... You can play everything better than you've ever heard it. I mean, he can play anything, and he's... brilliant. But that whole band is, they all played with Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles, and it's kind of right. Like that.
Well, it is. I kind of, as a musician myself, when I watch those kind of shows, it is mind blowing, like how many different arrangements of, I mean, the stuff they've got to do on a weekly basis to, and sounds so good. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, they're the best.
Yeah. So that's cool. Now, do you have a website? Like when this curriculum comes out, is it going to be, is it clarkbeckham.com?
Or? Yes, it is.
All right. That's well, that right was on. A good guess. I'm glad.
It's a good title for the website, clarkbeckham.com.
So there might even be somebody listening to this that is a worship leader that could learn some things. Like once you get this curriculum going, they could go and check out, you know, they've kind of heard your heart and hear who they're learning from that would benefit just your everyday church musician might be helpful.
One of my favorite demographics, I don't know if it's the right word, but type of person to teach are worship leaders and church band players. The music theory and then the vocal performance stuff is no one's teaching it. No one's teaching what I'm teaching. And I've seen people's ability just multiply and eyes light up when I teach these simple things. And so absolutely that
Man, I'm excited to kind of check it out myself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'd love
cool.
it.
Cool. All right. So as we near this thing to close it out, so, you know, I was just doing the math in my head. So if you're 30, and I'm not sure when this is going to be broadcast, but we're the second week of 2023. So, man, you were born like when some of the songs that we
92,
so yeah, 92. Like, so our audience, a lot of like, you know, I graduated from high school in 92. So Stephen Curtis Chapman, Great Adventure, and Michael W. Smith, and Third Day and DC Talk, and a lot of those guys, their heyday, and of course, some of them are still going strong. You know, you were in preschool, and so that, you know, so we're going to let you off the hook for not being maybe the level of a CCM fan that myself and Rachel are. But I do want to put you on the spot. Are there any artists in contemporary Christian music, anybody that you have listened to or influenced, anybody at all? Again,
like I'm putting, in the 90s?
Yeah, that are 90s
yeah,
artists.
Yeah. So Jeff Dio.
Oh, yeah. So your audience would know Jeff from Sonic Flood. They had a huge kind of a big Kickstarter to the worship movement, the Sonic Flood album in 1999. And then, of course, Jeff went on to do his own solo thing. So he's been a little influential for you.
Absolutely. And then I remember just blaring DC Talk stuff like Jesus Freak. And
all right. Well,
like
the
that.
Audience just all became Clark Beckham fans. Just because you said that, and as I'm sitting here with Clark, he doesn't have a tattoo on his belly that I see. But blaring Jesus Freak, yeah, that we're all about that.
Yeah.
So cool, man. Well, hey, thank you so much for being here today, and man, this has been a fun discussion, and I hope the audience has enjoyed it. Here at Mixtape Theology, we love to just to think and use our brains and connect with our hearts and God's word. And I think that there's been some challenging things talked about today. So Clark, thank you for coming and talking with us. God bless all you Jesus freaks out there. And I can't wait to talk to you again here at Mixtape Theology. This is Dr. Ashley, and I will talk to you soon. Just something about it.
The Mixtape Theology Podcast is part of the NRT Podcast Network. Find more Christian music-related podcasts at newreleasetoday.com.